Yep. Give me a nod when you're ready. Junior's ready. Stand by.
Hey everybody, welcome to this episode of 3GIQ. This week, our guest is Staff Sergeant Robert Germanello, also more colloquially known as Germ. He initially joined the team on the rifle team, initially shot high power. He is a communications Marine by backgrounds. And the reason that we're bringing him on is that he most recently brought home arguably the most prestigious award within the Marine Corps in terms of marksmanship, which is the Lockheimer. For those of you that don't know, the Lockheimer involves basically taking the high overall in both rifle, pistol, and multi-gun at Marine Corps championships. So you're competing within a pool of the top 10% from all the regions, and you are the one Marine standing at the top, lifting that heavy-ass trophy at the end of the day. So, Germ, appreciate you coming on, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Frank. Thanks for having me, Matt. I really appreciate you. Even just hearing you say those things right there, it's... Man, I feel like I'm going to get choked up in this episode.
It's all good, man. it's an emotional event for many good reasons. But looking back on this year's Marine Corps Championships, like right before leading up to it, what were your goals for yourself? I mean, everyone goes in it. Everyone with a competitive spirit is in it to win it. But like, what were you trying to get out of championships this year specifically?
Yeah, so I'm going to be honest. I had a really limited list of things to accomplish at championships. And my main goal was genuinely it was just to have a good time with my friends. It's the last championships I foresee myself reasonably being able to attend. And you know, the guys that I work with, they're not just coworkers, they're friends and their family, and I'm, you know, I'm leaving them. My things that I wanted to get done. I mean, I know I'm pretty good at rifle, and I say that in the most humble way I can. But I did have some fantasy of trying to win the overall rifle match. I wanted to, you know, maybe squeeze in a pistol medal because I'm not distinguished there, so I'm still playing that short game with pistol. And really, I just wanted to have a good time. I'm generally not as good of a pistol shot as some of the other rock stars that I work with. That's really all I wanted was a pistol medal. But other than that, I'll be honest, like there's not a whole lot from competition that I need. There's many things I want, but there's very few things I need. I'm pretty content with, at this point in my career, my abilities with shooting and how much I've, you know, just looking back and being honest with myself, how much I've grown over the past few years. I recognize that I can always do better. That's unquestionable. But winning or having a goal of actually winning anything, that was so far from my mind, because the real goal for me was really just being able to experience with my friends.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, you guys were having a good time. I was in the squad with all the AMTP guys, and you guys were always just an absolute riot. But even if you didn't have designs to win it all, I think you still approached it. You trained like you were going to give this competition everything. And what I mean by that is I saw you at basically every QSC USPSA match, right? And I saw your progression. You shot PCSL. You went to the gas gun match that was the week before championships. Why was participating in competitions on your own time so important to you?
So I have this blessing and a curse, and you'll hear me say that so often, of being surrounded by literally the best shooters in the Marine Corps. And when I was on teams, our main competition being the Army, I am now surrounded by people who have multiple national records, national trophies under their belts, more accolades than I can count. So there's this constant drive that if it doesn't come from within to do better, it definitely is forced on you from the outside. And even though I'm a bullseye rifle shooter by trade, I have enough humility to know that, like, that's not the most optimal sport to feed back into the training loop. So the reason I shoot all these other matches is not necessarily to prepare for competition. That's competition. Yes, I want to do well, but that's more of a me goal. I play all of these games because there's so much that I need to learn in order to be an effective instructor for the people that I'm, you know, responsible for teaching. There's such a good cross-pollination of ideas and practices that occur when you do play lots of games like that, that just, one, make you a better shooter, and then more importantly, make you a better instructor.
Yeah, great. That's great. And definitely paid off. But, you know, shooting that many matches, and a lot of folks go into Marine Corps Championships, they shoot the MCMC and then they end up at champs. Those of us that are shooting a lot of local matches and exposing ourselves to a lot of heat and a lot of competition, we're taking little lessons along the way and we're refining things. And for you, both as a competitor, as an instructor, what were some really crucial lessons that you learned in the lead up to championships that you were able to learn from and implement that helped during your run?
Yeah, so biggest lessons I've learned from for these games or for playing in championships was, as much as I didn't want to take my own advice, it's be good at the one game that you're good at, even if it's not that the one you want to be good at. And so what I mean by that is like, you know how I feel about rifle. It's just, that's just where my heart is. I for some reason just see that like Rain Man does, and it works out for me. But I work, like I said, I work with really good shooters. I watch other shooters like Josh Cardenas, Joe Morris, John Galamba. They just murder it with a pistol, and I can't do that. And while I try to, you know, minimize my shooting ego to as low as possible, it's just that hyper competitiveness that sometimes comes out, and I feel like I'm not as good as them. I need to keep up. And that's when I'll start playing outside of my league and I'll make mistakes. And then it's just downhill from there. So biggest thing that I stuck to, especially during championships, definitely during the pistol days, was, and I actually heard it was Go King talking to one of the other shooters, and he was just like, shoot your game. He's like, do not try to show off. Don't try to chase anyone else. Just shoot your game, because someone else isn't going to shoot theirs. And that's where yours is going to matter. So I really did. Like, my whole goal was to not shoot any mics. I think maybe I shot one or two mics. But compared to everybody else, that wasn't a whole lot. And, you know, I did well enough. Morris set a huge curve, so I think I came in like 79th percentile of him. But I held my own, you know, and that was just because I was focused enough to follow that lesson from all the other games that I've played while I'm trying to get good at just shooting.
I kind of have to agree with that statement. Like, I think it's a beautiful statement, because shooting is so deeply personal that when you start focusing on everybody else, you lose touch with yourself. So, you know, you have to, you know, I don't want to say internalize everything, but you have to find where you're happy and shoot your own game. Like, when you step up to that line, you're not shooting for anybody else. You're shooting for yourself. You're being selfish for yourself at that point. You're not representing anybody but yourself. So it is so deeply personal, and you do have to just shoot your own thing.
Yeah, and I definitely felt that more so this match. And I think that was just because, like, I was so happy that I even got to shoot another championship. So I was like, dude, I don't care if I do well. Like, I'm gonna do my best, because it would be disrespectful to everybody who can't come to championships if I just abused the opportunity. But I just mostly felt like, you know, if it works out, it works out. I'm gonna give it my best, and if it turns out that I'm worthy, then cool. And if not, it's really just the fact that I could spend 8 hours on the range to shoot 2 minutes, and the rest of the time I'm sitting next to my friends taking photos and laughing and watching other people have a good time.
Oh yeah, that's what it's all about. You talked about Morris absolutely demolishing the curve on pistol, but you set a pretty freaking steep curve when it came to rifle, especially on that PR or the gas gun day. I remember looking at the standings. I'm like, wow, Germ freaking slayed it. So the championship spans a week and it's six distinct matches, and you do pretty well. Like, you limit your mistakes on pistol, you kill it on gas gun. At which point did you realize that, hey, Lockheimer might be a thing?
I gotta say, maybe at the end of that day. I was very critical of myself that day, and I will say that, like, I'm not necessarily proud of my attitude that day for anyone that saw me, because I was not necessarily prioritizing having a good time. You know, I would sometimes, you know, I wasn't like throwing a fit on the range or anything, but I was definitely like, if I don't do well, I'm going to beat myself up because I have to do good. I'm extra critical of myself, and this is supposed to be, you know, this is supposed to be my game. It's as much as I don't want to have an ego, there are people that know, like, I used to be the coach of the rifle team. And if I let someone beat me, then, you know, I'm kind of like, I don't want to
say yourself.
I'm not necessarily failing myself. You know, like, it kind of like breeds way for like, oh dang, I can easily beat somebody on the Marine Corps shooting team that's supposed to be the head coach. So it's not necessarily like my pride. It's like the team's pride that I, you know, really no longer represent. So it's kind of like, even though that's no longer my station, I still have to represent well. It's kind of like once a Marine, always a Marine. You know, even though you retire, you still go out, and they're going to look at you always like former Marine. Mm-hmm. They're not going to look at you as like that guy. So I, you know, there was a lot of pressure on me that day, but I did pretty well. I definitely thought, okay, I might get like a stage win or two, but the fact that I was able to lock in and take five of the six stage wins, that's how I knew I was going to set a pretty big lead. And for anyone that's listening that maybe doesn't understand, I mean, I'm sure you all do. It's you know, it's practical shooting, so everything's graded on a curve. Because I was overall, I got the 100. And if you look at the other matches, the overall guy set a curve gap of about 2 to 3%. Mine was almost 10.
Yeah,
which is, it's pretty significant on a curve. So much so to the point that like people five or six places down were already in the, you know, 70th, low percentiles. 80s. So that I knew that when I was Rain Man in those numbers, that was gonna work out well in my favor. But I didn't think it was gonna get me. I didn't think it was gonna get me number one.
Yeah. So let's talk about that mental space, right? You just demolished that particular day, but you know, you still have multi-gun, which by your own admission, right, your strengths are gas gun, bullseye. You have multi-gun. We had ARQ on Saturday, or Sunday, because they pushed it back.
Yeah.
And that ends up getting thrown out, right? That doesn't even end up being a factor, but at the time we didn't know that. And then you still have a night rifle portion. So how did you maintain your focus throughout the rest of those matches? You're only halfway through at that point.
I'm not going to lie. I really struggled with it. I started to get quiet. You know, I was real lucky in that the command didn't mess with me while I was shooting. Some of the other guys kept getting called back to the office. That interrupts your flow state. I was nervous, you know, like I really was terrified, like, oh my God, this is usually where everything in my life goes wrong, right close to the top, because You know, like I'm super ADHD, so I'll overthink things. And then like, I'll just get in my own head and boop, just dump it. Everything, all performance dumps. And somehow I'm not sure if it was you that maybe RO'd me or a couple times. I didn't film a whole lot during the matches, but you'll see like in my stages, I learned this lesson from a Mick or the championships 2 years ago where, Captain Scott was actually ROing and he said, "Are you ready?" And I just was like, "Yeah, I'm ready." Not being deliberate with that command. And like, now it's like, "Are you ready?" "No, I'm not." Like, let me calm myself down. Let me think about, visualize success, what it looks like. What are the key things? What's my movement got to look like? Where am I reloading? And then the planets aligned and I put it together. I don't really know how that worked out. It's easy to look from the outside in and say, "Oh, well, you just trained a lot. Yeah, that's what you did." But inside, I did not feel confident.
Nothing traits you for that moment, except from being in competition. Like the moment that you know that something's on the line, something changes, man. Like something snaps inside, and you're right. You're the nerves, the anxiety. Like everyone already feels that during competition, but knowing that you're within striking distance of a goal, the ultimate goal, that changes everything.
Now, I will say that one of the things that was prevalent in my mind that whole time, and I didn't tell them this, so they're probably going to find this out just now, is there's two guys in my office. They've never shot. One of them has shot competition. I'm not sure about the other one, but they've never shot a Mi'kmaq, and they've definitely never shot championships.
Gomez?
No. A couple of the other guys.
Yeah.
Grissom and...
Yeah, Grissom and Dotson.
Okay.
And I cared about their experience a lot, that there were times where I was pointing out, like, "See, this is where the blah, blah, blah," and watching their mental state go, when I perceived it, that maybe they were like getting low, like I'm trying to help them, like, you know, like, "It's okay. It's not the end of the world. Like, you made a mistake." And, you know, they're, I can see the spark in their minds of like, "So like, how well did I do?" I'm getting this kind of vibe from them. And to me, it's like, dude, this is your first competition. The only goal you should have in your first competition, which is ironic, which ironically is because it's the goal in my last competition, is to have fun. Like, you absolutely, you shouldn't want to DQ either. But if you do, that's a learning point. And that's valuable. So, I have this like point in my mind that like failure is always going to happen. It's inevitable that it's going to happen. So like you either accept that failure, and that will happen, and just make sure that when it happens, you do learn from it, or you just crumble under that pressure of like, "Oh my God, I'm going to fail." And like, yeah, I know I'm saying that kind of like out of both sides of my mouth, because I was terrified, like, "Oh, I might mess this up." But at the same time, it's like, whatever. I know who I am. If I don't win this thing, it's not like this stuff on my uniform isn't who defines me. It's really cool. Absolutely. It spreads awareness about the program. And to some people who can't see past the superficial, like, that does lend credibility to me, but I know who I am and I know what I'm capable of. So to me, it's like having fun and self-development for them. Those guys that feel like they're under pressure, like I wanted them to have a good time.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of times focusing on someone else and helping someone else out does take, you know, takes a little bit of that anxiety off of yourself. I do have one more question, and this isn't covered on the sheet that we sent you, but you and I had a short conversation just about your mental space post-Lockheim or post-championships. And you confided in me that you were feeling a little bit of imposter syndrome. You were kind of talking yourself out of it. You were cheapening your victory. But, you know, from my perspective, there's really no reason to do that, because the previous two Lockheimer champions were there this year, right? John Glomba was competing and Chris Scott was competing. But in terms of, right, as competitors, we're always chasing victory, but like, the way we handle our victories is very important, right? And I think that was something that you were very concerned about on when I talked to you on Saturday, just in terms of like how this is going to factor into the way you approach shooting in the future. So I guess where's your head at now? And like, now that you have some time removed, how are you viewing this particular victory in isolation?
Yeah, Frank, I don't know if your viewers are going to see this video, but like, I literally have a note on here about that exact thing. So if, for those listening, I self-diagnosed myself with what I call imposter syndrome, which is, I don't want to say it's from any specific ethnic upbringing or anything, but I mean, you know, I was raised.
No, we talked about this. It's definitely a Bay Area Asian thing.
Yeah, it's nothing is ever good enough. You know, like I've lived my whole life to believe that, you know, if someone tells me it's a good job, that they're just saying that just because like that's what's socially required of someone when you do something good. That causes me to like low-key seek validation from other people constantly, which means I'm always trying to self-improve. I'm like, even if I do win something, like goalposts instantly moved to something else. Like, okay, cool. I had duty last night. And what do? Like, yeah, I won the Lochheimer. What do? I go look at the gold books and it's like, how many people double Lochheimer? Turns out one dude won it 6 times. So it's like, oh, well. And I mean, we can sit there and be like, yeah, different course of fire was probably easier back then, blah, blah, blah. But you know, that's just unfortunately, it's not a healthy habit that I have, but I live with it. And I just have so much respect for the people that I've competed with, like the ones you mentioned. Blomba's a gold Lochheimer, Chris Scott, gold Lochheimer, even people that haven't won it. I look at these people like literally heroes in shooting to me, and I just don't feel like I belong amongst them. Like I did a hat trick one time, and I know that sounds stupid because the match is a week long, but it's just hard personally to deal with. I have to learn, like as a person, I just have to learn how to indulge in my wins a little bit. But, you know, that also frightens me because I never, and I think I said this to you, I never want to wind up like that meme where it's the dude that's like biting the metal and he's like shooting champagne all over. And then
he's last place on the podium.
Yeah. And it zooms out. And it's like, he's like eighth place because he let stardom and vanity go to his head. And that's because like, you know, maybe you've been in the downrange club and you've seen the sign on the wall. Like my year as coach, I put that sign on the wall so the guys would see it on their way out every morning that says forever a student in pursuit of mastery. And the second you stop saying that you have anything left to learn, like you've lost, you've created an artificial ceiling and you're not chasing anything anymore. And I don't ever want to be like that.
Also, people don't want to be around you when you're like that.
Yeah, I mean, it bleeds over into so many different types of personalities or parts of your personality where it's like, well, I don't need to hear that because I already know this. And I mean, can you imagine like some extreme version of someone being like, my credential is that I have this one thing on my chest, so I know everything. And it's like, that's silly. That's like, that's not being open-minded to new things to learn. And like I said, my primary job, at least right now, is to instruct Marines. And if I'm not ever trying to better myself as an instructor by learning all that I can, then I'm plateaued and I'm now obsolete.
Yeah. And that's something we've talked about. I think it's very prevalent. Maybe not so much in the competitive world, but definitely in the firearms and the training industry. But thank you for all those answers. That's good.
Yeah, totally.
So, Jerm, you and I—we go back what, about 5 years now?
Ooh, yeah, we do.
We have a lot of history, you know. At one point, I was pistol team. You were rifle team. Then I took over the entire team, and you know, you kind of fell under that umbrella. And we have a lot of history, you know, both good, bad. At the end of the day, we're really good friends. I think we both helped each other out for the better, gain a lot of insight about each other. And, you know, I'm honored to call you a friend. But, you know, throughout your time on the team, you know, we talked about you started shooting high power. You did get dismissed from the team. Take lead at what's it called? It was
FMTC.
FMTC, Foreign Military Training Course, and then AMTP started up, and you became a very prominent member of AMTP. Ultimately, as we discussed, you won the Lockheimer. Do you have any insights of the ups and downs of your time on Quantico that you'd like to share with the audience?
Yeah, I do. And I wrote down some things for this question, yet for some reason it's a little bit out of order here. That was, boy, you're going to have to edit out the blank spot here.
Nah, it's all good.
Yeah, what was the question again?
Are there any insights from the ups and downs of your time on Quantico that you'd like to share with the audience?
You know, biggest thing is, boy, it's tough. It really is tough to put that in, but for me, it was at least after leaving teams, my biggest thing for my ups and downs is sticking to my convictions. You know, for those listening, if you know my story, you know it. And if you don't, it really doesn't matter. The point is that I was asked to leave teams. And then like 40 minutes later, it was like, nah, you're off teams.
Well, I'll be the first one to say, you know, one, you know, as well as I do, I was pissed that you left teams. There's nothing I could do at that point. You know, me and some of the other leadership throughout the battalion, we had discussions and we were all like, what the fuck? You know, and you know, I remember going and talking to Gunnar Clinton, and I was like, give him a task and he will accomplish it. Let him know what he has to do and he will do better than the standard. You know, you are a fire and forget type of weapon.
You just shoot me off and you forget about me?
I didn't want to ship you off. Somebody else did. You know, and let's be real. You have a very strong personality and not everybody knows how to take that.
Dude, so that, yeah, that's like, I am without a doubt, extremely hard-headed and against the grain. Whether you think it's funny or not, I just found this out about myself, but there's a very high chance that I'm autistic. So that explains a lot of it. but you know, if something doesn't make sense to me, I'm going to push the envelope on it. And that's kind of what I started to encounter a lot with the leadership at the time. Not specifically I'm not talking about you actually at all.
Yeah.
And it just got to the point where I felt that I was being
undermined in your position.
Micromanaged. I'm a senior staff NCO at this point in my career. I know what I'm doing. I'm not a child. I know how to make decisions. I've been in charge of sections where I'm responsible for thousands of Marines. I've been trusted, and I don't feel like I was ever given a reason to not be trusted. I may not do the things the way you want me to do them, but God damn it, I'll be effective. And you know, for me, I run into that issue too, because I'm just very particular in how I do things. I run into that issue too with junior Marines, that they don't do things the way I want them to do it, but they're effective. And that's part of the trust in leadership, is that I have to let you do things. I have to let you discover right and wrong, especially if it's not mission critical. Like, nobody's dying and property's not getting lost.
Well, it's one of the things I did as a platoon sergeant, I'll tell my squad leaders, is like, hey, this is what we have to get accomplished. I wouldn't tell them how to do it. I'd let them figure it out on their own. Why? Because that's how you make people learn.
Yeah. So, you know, it just got to a point where I felt, and whether you view it as right or wrong, I felt like you either have to let me execute my billet as described, or you need to fire me. And, you know, like, that bluff got called. So, you know, one of the ups of it is that I stuck to my convictions. I felt like I made decisions that were for the betterment of the team. And ultimately, it did work out for the better. Hell, the rifle team even beat the AMU during a major match the year that I was the coach. That hadn't happened in 10 years, as far as my math goes. I mean, I'm ballparking, but it's pretty close. You know, the silver lining to the downside of being dismissed from the team is that I had a clarity for how I was straying away from the idea of being a marksmanship instructor. I really allowed myself, because again, you know, like I seek validation. I allowed myself to become kind of self-absorbed in the status of like being on teams. You know, after, like you said, after teams, I went to be the staff NCIC of the, it's the formal marksmanship training center.
Oh, sorry. You were dealing a lot with foreign military weapons.
Yeah.
The foreign weapons instructor course.
Yeah. So I was a staff NCIC for three different schools under one roof. And I worked to change the curriculum for at least the coaches course in a way that would make a better coach and eventually a better, you know, a better trainer. The term coach means something very special to me. And so the way the Marine Corps chooses to use the word coach in coaches course, you know, it's a little bit like, just calling, you know, tap water and sugar in a bag Kool-Aid. Like you wouldn't, it's not the same thing. But I love that I had the privilege to be in that position where I could like directly affect that end user student in a more routine, in a more uniform way with a bunch of really cohesive dudes. Everyone over at FMTC was, they were on point. They knew their stuff. They wanted to work hard and they all had the same mission of what we have to produce. Little did I know how extremely similar the methods and strategies that I was coming up with at FMTC to improve coaches course was to what MPMS down the hall was doing with AMTP program. So because I had a decent shooting track record and a pretty progressive approach in the way I looked at standards development, I think that fed a lot into me being selected to be, you know, an AMTP instructor. It all worked out, you know, like that's, you ask for ups and downs, but I mean, really it's all ups. It's all perspective. I don't, as much as I was like sad at the time, I guess that's really the right word, depressed. I've had enough speed bumps in my career that I know there's no goddamn pothole in the road that defines me moving forward for the rest of my life. I mean, that is unless I do something like absolutely wild. But I mean, you know, an honest mistake is not going to define you the rest of your life.
No. And this is just one part of your life. Like when you retire, there's going to be so much more, you know,
all the rules and regulations in the military, it's all made up anyway, except like murder, you know, don't do that.
Or some other serious things. Yeah, you know, I like that. And one thing I really cherish is how you still kept coming around. You know, you never held it against any of the guys, and it wasn't the guys that really had any effect on you leaving the team, but you still maintained that close proximity with the team and were still very much involved with the team for a while there.
You know, I will say that, like, that's that part of my personality that actually stems from and one of the big interactions I had with you. I mean, I don't really care who hears this when they're listening, but you know, I went through a point in my life where I was about to get divorced and my life was falling apart, and you and me were standing out front of the CP, and I was just crying in your arms because I didn't know how to handle it. That moment there, like, dude, you took me under your wing. You got me help and you put me on a path to where I was able to start figuring out my own emotional intelligence, learning about myself, how I manage my emotions, how I manage my mental state. All of that has fed into how I teach other people, how I'm cognitive of how other people are receiving information, how I process my own information when I'm running a stage. Like it's helped me so much. Like I'm so thankful. Like if I've never said that, dude, like I'm so thankful that like for that one moment, because it's fed tree branches to all of these memories I have.
I'm kind of speechless.
It really is, man.
It does mean a lot. You know, and that's something I think on, you know, we haven't always been the closest, but we have always remained close. and we've always sought each other out and made sure we were all good. And I think that's something special, and you don't get that much many other places, you know, and you would do the same thing for me.
You know, I would come around. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, dude.
Yeah, no, you're good. Go on.
I was just thinking, like, I would come around too a lot, and that's because, like, I really do believe in the vision for the team, and like, I really do just it's just the simplest way to put it is, like, I enjoy the idea of furthering marksmanship for Marines. I think the team has so much potential. Like, it has such a great history. It has so much inertia, and, you know, when it's focused correctly, like, it can do so much good for the Marine Corps. It's really not even the team that has the issues. It's really just getting the rest of the community to listen, and not just give lip service when it's like, oh yeah, shooting, it makes people better, and like, every Marine is a rifleman, but I'm not going to let anyone go to the range type of deal, you know? So, like, I really love the team's missions. You know, I'm just saying it for the audience out there. You know, I was kind of the social media guy when I was on the team. I just kind of took that upon myself.
You're good at it.
You know,
like, and it's fun.
It is. It's super fun. It's super fun to make a thing and then watch the engagement. And then, you know, it's hard not to take it personally when there's people out there that
criticize,
start just negative and nasty.
There's that one old timer. He retired in 1984. I'm not going to say his name. He's a retired gunnery sergeant. His first name is Johnny, and that's all I'll say. And he kept harping on the team, and like, to the point where he was messaging Captain Scott on Facebook. Give me your number. I need to talk to you right now. And it's just
oh my God, I didn't even know that. That's
oh
crazy.
Yeah.
But I believed in it so much that, like, I would buy my own camera equipment. I bought my own lights. I would go into the office at like 2 a.m. just to film stuff. I mean, fuck the when we had other leadership that we were, you know, under together, and he came to me. He's like, I want you to work with the Pentagon's Comstrat so that they can make a recruitment video or an advertisement video for the Mi'kmaq. And I was like, you know, I already did that, right? Like, I just have to do I just got to put the music in the background. And he's like, you know, the hand wave thing. And I want you to work with them. And then we had that meeting, and the guy,
it was pointless.
Yeah. The guy came down, and I just kind of like took a risk. And I was like, actually, I kind of made something already. If you want to take a look at it, dude looked at it and was like, nah, that's fine. We're going to use that. And that video got put on the front of Marines.mil for like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But that's just because it's not about like, oh, I did it. It's cool that I get some credit, but it's like, I care about the program that much. I want to see it succeed. So, like, yeah, I don't really know how else to say that. I just, that's one of the reasons I kept coming around, and I still come around. Is
it's one of the reasons I still go around. Like, they're just good people.
It is.
And everybody over there has like infectious personalities. And, you know, we talk about, you want to be around people who are successful, you know, in the book Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell, it's like, you know, successful people put themselves around other successful people and they become more successful. And that's the type of mentality that you always, those are the type of people that you always want to surround yourself with.
Yeah, I agree.
But, you know, kind of moving on to AMTP, you know, and huge kudos to, you know, the guys there. You know, 3 Marines took the Lockheimer from AMTP. You know, I don't know. I didn't look in the history of teams a whole lot, but I don't, you know, 3 people who are not on teams. Like, let's be real. You guys were on teams, but you're not on teams anymore. 3 people took the Lockheimer that weren't on the Marine Corps shooting team. You know, what about AMTP's culture was instrumental into that success?
Yeah, so you kind of hit it on the head there. Like, yeah, we were teams and we weren't teams. And the things I'm going to say, I just want anyone that's on the shooting team to listen. There is no shade to the shooting team. We both have two different jobs, and I understand that. Some of your strengths are also the weakness, depending on the perspective. So like you said, we pretty much everybody from MPMS that is an AMTP instructor also used to be on teams. That you can use, you can say that to some degree, and because some people be like, well, you guys just came from teams. It's like, yeah, I also came from teams 2 years ago. So skills atrophy, obviously I do something to maintain relevance. But there's a lot of continuity in the personalities and the culture. So there's not a whole lot that the instructor group at MPMS had to really work on to build that positive feedback loop that's kind of necessary for a good training environment. Like, for example, everybody that comes to teams, I would say 99% of them, they don't just show up. They're hand selected. Mm-hmm. It's a soft SDA. You have to have the right character, the right work ethic, and the right level of proficiency coming in so that you're eligible to be a part of the team, because we don't have time to worry about a bad training environment because of personality conflicts or because we're expected to be proficient and perform at such a high level. So coming over to MPMS, you know, we already kind of got like the echoes of that from their last spot on teams. There's also in the office a little bit of dark humor because, you know, we are technically all former teams, but we're not on teams. So teams is supposed to be the best shooters.
Mm-hmm.
So it's also kind of like, yeah, we really want to beat teams just to be like, ha, teams didn't win. It was some other section that won, but you know, so it's kind of like lighthearted fun, or like a good rivalry, in that way. I will say there are some cultural differences that I do think make a difference. And again, anything bad. It's just something I observe. On teams, you're an instructor and a competitor, but arguably you do a lot more competition than instruction. At least that's my experience.
I would agree.
And the instruction that is done, it's either to each other when you're training, or it's to Marines during a MCMC, which are events that aren't required for any particular person to attend. That means that the target audience that you're teaching, it's hit or miss, and it's also not specific. So, and while we always wanted to put together the best possible showing to inspire Marines to pursue mastery of marksmanship on their own, it's always an uphill battle trying to get buy-in from those Marines' commands. That leads, in my opinion, like from what I've seen, a bunch of different people coming up with like, what's the best way to get engagement? And well, it's to do this, or maybe it's to do that, or maybe we need to offer this. And so it's asynchronous problem solving. It's not uniform. It's not cohesive. And it made me always feel like we were trying to validate our own existence by giving these soft, intangible whiffums to senior leaders. And I say intangible because it's not like the senior leader themselves is getting anything out of it. It's their Marine. So when it's like me, if someone's trying to come to my house as a Kirby vacuum salesman and be like, your carpets will be clean because your kid is going to be really good at cleaning them. And it's like, well, my kids sometimes choose on Legos, so I don't really believe that. But okay, if you say so, like maybe if he has time, I'll let him vacuum. And so it's an uphill battle that is unfortunate because it's not an institutional requirement. AMTP is. It's a commanding general from TECOM directed task that this get taught this by all combat instructors, to all combat instructors, to all O3s during IMC. They get some version of it. That keeps us in a job because we are constantly teaching combat instructors and fleet infantrymen so that they can sustain their privates that come out of boot camp but IMC and wind up knowing more than they do. There's a lot of pressure on us because our target audience is that warfighter, you know, that infantryman. It does help that we have a POI, a program of instruction like curriculum, that it's stable, it's uniform. And now, just because I'm saying that doesn't mean, or just because I'm saying this, it doesn't mean that's not a good thing for teams too. Like, teams doesn't have a program of instruction like curriculum. They wind up teaching methods and strategies and techniques. But for example, when I was on the rifle team, I only ever taught short range to mid range rifle skills from a barricade. Pistol guys taught bay pistol. The action guys taught bay rifle. There was at no point ever any expectation that the different disciplines learned each other's material, be competent enough to it to where they could cover down or teach it. And so now there's, you know, that creates splits in the ocean. And then that, you know, leads off to like people thinking this is more important or that's more important. Or we get to the point where we're arguing like, how do we weigh what's more, is bullseye rifle worth as much as action pistol in the past? You know, so because we're not cohesive on teams as our material goes. ANTP, there is not one guy that I can't, I can give any one of my guys any part of the curriculum and they will teach it like it's their own. And that level of cohesiveness means that we have to all know it and all be proficient at it in such a manner that I can perform on demand in front of a student and say like, this is possible. Let me Yoda you like an Empire Strikes Back where I can't believe you did that. Or I was like, this is impossible. And like, I just do it because I'm proficient enough to do it. Surely there are Marines on the shooting team right now who can perform as well or you know, to a degree well in their sport and other sports, but it's just not the expectation. So
we seem to be hyper-focused on specific skill sets. Yeah. You know, yeah. Rifle team is rifle team, pistol team is pistol team. Multi-gun is kind of really the only, I don't want to say a jack of all trades, but I would say they're reasonably more well-rounded than the other two teams because they focus on shooting all the other weapon systems.
And I said that's not a bad thing because it is really important, in my opinion, that teams is unrestricted in the way they train. They are definitely mature enough to choose the right ways to train, but it's mm-hmm. super important they don't, because that is a war factory of producing some extremely potent shooters mm-hmm. Because they're given that fidelity to just pick the way they train.
Well, it's like, you know, I often get frustrated whenever, especially when I was like the staff NCOIC of the team, whenever somebody would come up to me and be like, I need a training schedule for the upcoming month. And I'm like, it doesn't work like that. Well, what do you mean it doesn't work like that? I cannot give you a reasonable training schedule. I can tell you what days we're going to be on what ranges, but I'm not going to give you a detailed training schedule because the way we train is dictated by the performance of the previous match.
By the proficiency.
And if I mess up on a certain skill set, if I am not proficient in a certain skill set, that's going to be the majority of my training up until the next month or the next match. And you have to keep it light and flexible like that, because then you're only going you're going to forget everything else.
Yeah, let me talk about that real quick, because I hate that word training and trained. Mm-hmm. I have this idea, and if it exists somewhere else, like, I don't know, this is just what I've come up with, but it's my quote unquote experience continuum, which is comprised of from the lowest to the highest, you have trained, qualified, proficient, and mastered. And a training program, like you're talking about, it's like, I'm working with people that are trying to be proficient.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a relative thing. I don't know what's going to happen because I don't know what I need to be proficient in yet. I have to first evaluate. So like being trained means I said some things at you because I'm required to say things at you. And then you sign a piece of paper that says like I was trained, and there's no expectation that you demonstrate.
Have to perform.
Nope, not at all. That's why back in the saddle training that we do in the beginning of the year, it's a big group thing. Somebody talks about like a jet ski. Oh no, that's 101 days of summer. And then you sign a roster. You sign a bunch of them. Qualified. Qualified is now I said things at you, and then you have to do the bare minimum requirement for me to give you that title. Like ARQ is a qualification. And while we assign tiers to that by saying marksman, sharpshooter, expert, really it's objective. It's one or zero. It's qualified or not. So the worst possible bare minimum is marksman. And the best possible bare minimum, which is kind of a spicy way to look at it, is expert. That's the best possible bare minimum that the Marine Corps needs, is you to be expert. Proficiency, which is where everybody in teams and everybody in MPMS sits, is that's anything you do beyond qualified. The TNR task of for a Marine is conduct a speed reload. There's no time associated with that. It's just do it. It could take 3 hours to do a speed reload and you did it. Once you assign a third, fourth, fifth, other that X amount of points of perspective to that assessment, you now create a relative assessment where there's more than one ways to measure somebody. So just like in a match, we measure with hit factor. It's speed and accuracy. And you could arguably measure it by other points depending on what your interests are. I mean, can you imagine if you ran a match and it's like, who was the fastest and most accurate and kept their heart rate the lowest? Like there's so many ways you could look at proficiency. And that is a really big scope, which is why I don't know what I need to work on yet, because I need to go do some stuff and figure it out. And then finally, I cap it off with master or mastery or attaining mastery. And that is essentially the same thing as proficient, but it's the only part of the experience continuum where you can't identify yourself as it. I can identify myself as trained. I can identify myself as qualified, proficient. I can only become a master of something when other people start referring to me as it.
Yeah.
And that also feeds into like my signs of like forever a student in pursuit of mastery. Once I accept that I am a master or I claim that, like I've lost. I can't move on. So yeah, I want to like, it's really important for me to define those terms, because I hate when someone's like, what's your training plan? And it's like, I'm not trying to train. I'm trying to become proficient. I don't have a roadmap for proficiency yet, because I don't know what it is. But we're working on it. We're going to go out. We're going to explore. We're going to compete. We're going to validate our skills against each other or against paper. You know, sometimes even force on force is a really good proficiency validator. But yeah, I don't want to tangent too much. I hate that term, training plan.
Mm. Yes. All right. Last question. And I think you have a lot of really good insight on this. So, the Marine Corps is a very first impressions based organization. I mean, it all starts with whenever you check into a command, you're in your alphas, and they judge you based on how you look in your alphas. Unfortunately, this Marines, since we are first impression based, Marines that have adversity on their records are sometimes treated unfairly. As someone who has experienced setbacks, is there anything you'd like to say, Marines who might have made honest mistakes and are afraid it will continue to affect the rest of their career?
This is the only question where I didn't take notes down on, because I wanted to make sure I answered it just from like my actual heart and not overthink it. Bad things happen. And if you let that define you, I already said earlier, then you got to live with that. You make a bed, you got to lay in it. When I first got to teams, that was about the time when I needed to re-enlist. I've got an NJP in grade. It's not looking good, especially with the downsizing of the force. Sergeant Major just got on deck, and if you remember Sergeant Major back then,
mm-hmm.
Not saying that he's any wildly different now, but Sergeant Major brought me into his office, and actually you went with me, and he was like, Hey, you good, Gunny? He's a grown man. He can have his own conversation. And he sat me down and he goes, I'm not going to beat around the bush. multiple 60-105s, unauthorized tattoos, multiple NJPs. I'm not putting my name on you. It's just how it is. And I was like, no, I totally understand, Sergeant Major. Like, I would be delusional to think that you would just blindly sign your name to me. I get it. But just work with me for a little bit, and maybe I can change your mind. I poured my heart and soul into that team, and I poured my heart and soul into everything that I've touched, because it is actually important to me. Mark's getting other Marines to be as good and better than I can be with a gun is it's just important to me. I don't really know how else to explain it. Three years later, I'm in Sergeant Major's office, and I'm like, Sergeant Major, I got my reenlistment package. And he dead-ass looked me in the face and said, I'm honored to sign this. He went out of his way, because I had to get a commanding general's waiver, he went out of his way to write me like a 2.5-page letter of recommendation to the training command, high command. He told me, like, there's in his 27 years, there's only 3 people that he's ever done. I'm the 3rd person that he's ever done that for. So while I don't feel like I did anything necessarily special, I've never like gone out of my way and been like, oh my God, look what I'm doing. Like, did you take notice? Like, put that one in your tally.
You're not like that. You just busted your ass every single day and poured your heart and soul into everything you did.
Yeah, I just worked hard for it. And I know that if, as much as I don't believe in myself a lot of the time, if someone sees me for half of the way that I know I'm worth, I'll be okay. And if you're listening and if you've got adversity on your record, like, it happens. And if your leadership didn't forgive you or is holding it over your head, that's on them, okay? You have every opportunity to turn your life around, to be a better Marine, and to make an impact on someone else's life. I can't tell you how many times I've had Marines just message me on Facebook or just write me out of the blue. I had a summer shooter like 6 months ago write me out of the blue and just – or call me. And he was like, hey, man, I just wanted to let you know, like, you helped me out so much, and I miss the memories that we had together, and it just seemed like you actually cared about me. I had a former teams guy, not even a couple months ago, reach out to me and say the same things. And it to me, I just don't feel like I make that big of an impact, because I'm not trying to, I just care about people. And, you know, at the expense of not rambling, if you have adversity, there's always a way to turn it around. And if someone doesn't recognize it, like, all that matters is that you know you did the right thing by trying to improve. So, yeah. Somehow it worked out. I know you said I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but I mean, just to frame like how much of a miracle this medal on my or badge on my uniform is
you were almost not here for championships. You were almost out of the Marine Corps.
In August, Dan Rhodes came into the office and he goes, Germ, I'm not good at this and I don't know how to tell you. The monitor is not recommending you for retention. You're not gonna be able to reenlist. I'm sorry. And my life flipped upside down. So I immediately start trying to, I got a wife and 3 kids. I gotta provide for, you know, stuff got a little bit dark for a little bit, but you know, I pulled myself up and like, okay, let's try some other, let's try active reserves. Let's try, going to the Army. A couple days before Christmas, just a miracle happened where the STAT monitor called me and said, hey, you got approved for reenlistment for 24 months. So you're good. From that point on, I worked it with my monitor. So I was like, hey, can I rotate away from weapons training battalion in like May? It's going to work out better for my family. Also, it lets me like get one last little huzzah in with my friends. Yeah, sure. Cool. He could have said no. He could have just sent me away, but he didn't. That's miracle two for me. Then, like through all the AMTPs we're having to run, hey, SOI West, they need an MTT out there. So we're going to have to send people out there for 2 weeks to teach them. It's exactly the same time as championships. We need you. At this point, I got to suck it up and I got to say, like, well, I need to just be happy that I was able to reenlist. So I don't get to do this. Mission first. Work turned out, we didn't have to do it. So I got to go to championships. And then the everyday miracle of me somehow just holding it together, at least that's how I looked at it in my mind. And then I somehow win the Lochheimer. It's just for me, I mean, I don't know how it sounds to people listening, but for me to experience that and the stress and the depression of not knowing like if I'm going to be jobless and homeless to then being quote unquote, you know, the best competitive shooter of the 2023 season. That's a dope story to me. I can't help but like kind of smile at it.
No,
it is. Yeah. It's an incredibly dope story. And, watching you shoot throughout champs and knowing what you'd been through. I told Matt, I was like, we got to have him on. We have to share the story because, unfortunately, you know, as someone who went through being a company commander at 8th Com, there was a jaded side of me that was like, I would look at Marines with adversity unfairly. I wouldn't expect much of them. And I was like, you know, I got all these people that don't have issues with them that I got to focus on. But I think if anything, watching you and hearing your story, Germ, is telling me that like, that's the wrong way to approach things as a leader. Your job as a leader is to bring the best out of the people underneath you, and everyone has value. Everyone has something to bring to the table. It's up to you to tap into that. And if you discard them, you're doing them a disservice. I'm really grateful you came and talked to us. Very grateful that you were so open and willing to share everything that's happened over the last few years. But as we're wrapping up, any last words for us?
It really has been. I mean, it's your guys' podcast, and I don't know how you look at it, but it the fact that I'm even recognized as like good material for your show. I really appreciate it. Like I'm just not used to recognition. I have ideas of like, yeah, it would be cool to win this thing. It would be cool to meet that goal of mine. But like, usually I don't meet them. I set them high enough so that like, I'll always strive for something. So to actually kind of hit one that was really big, it's kind of uncomfortable because it's like, what do I do now? How do I prestige from here? And I've got ideas, but you know, I really gotta figure it out. I'm going to California, and from what I hear, it's not the end of the world when it comes to competition. There's a lot of opportunities to compete. It just might be a little bit different than what I'm used to, but I don't plan to. I have to reorient myself towards my actual job. The Marine Corps has called me back to be a cyber chief, but that doesn't mean that my competitive spirit is going to die in some cubicle. I will make sure that this program gets the notoriety or exposure that it needs.
Hey man, if there's a base that needs it, it's freaking Miramar. Having spent, that was my first fleet tour, and just some of the NCOs and some of the wing Marines that I ran to on the range, it wasn't it. So hopefully you are able to bring some of that competitive fervor there. But thanks again, Germ. This was a tremendous conversation. To our listeners, I hope you took something away from this. Let us know what you think. And if you want to reach out to Germ, your handle is germs89, right?
On Instagram, germs_89. Social on Facebook, it's just robert.germanello. You can reach out to me for anything you need. Now, sometimes my messages go to like message requests, so I'm not ignoring you, but I always write back.
But thanks again, and hope you guys enjoyed this one.
All right.